And welcome back to another edition of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside my always reliable co-host, Jonah Tolles. And Jonah, it's been quite a while since we were here, a couple days. A lot of things has happened. The Cowboys actually got a victory over the terrible New York Giants, even though it was a bit of a struggle for the Cowboys early on. We're going to get into the college football playoffs. We'll briefly touch on some Senior Bowl invitations. We've already seen some early invitations already be announced. And then we'll finish up with some Twitter questions. And this is something that we're going to get into most likely on Thursdays. We're going to go ahead and brand it as Twitter Thursdays, but we're going ahead and starting it early on a Wednesday just so we can get a good feel for it. So we're doing something special for you guys. We're going to go ahead and announce that. We're going to go ahead and brand this thing Twitter Thursdays. But before I move on to our first segment, Jonah, how's everything going, man?
Man, all praise the black cat that came on the field. The Cowboys were down 9-3. And then when the black cat came out, the Cowboys won 37-18. That's what I'm talking about, man. Hey, I'm all for cats coming on the field if it means the Cowboys win. Because I know the Cowboys play the Vikings. We got a Locked On College Football duel here next Sunday. So that's going to be really interesting on that next Monday podcast.
Somebody's going to be really upset on the podcast. I don't know who, but somebody on either end of this microphone is going to be really upset on the Monday morning show. But with that being said, we've seen a lot of things happen in the college football landscape. As I mentioned, we seen last night that the first college football playoff rankings came out. And let's just say it kind of lit Twitter on fire in a sense, just because there were the usual suspects that we expected. And, you know, Clemson, Alabama, and LSU, of course, all of those teams have made college football playoffs previously, I should say. Clemson and Alabama have made college playoffs previously, I should say. But I've been clamoring all along that this team is the best team in college football right now. And for those of you that did not see the rankings, it was number one, Ohio State, number two, LSU, number three, Alabama, and number four, which was the surprise to everyone, it was Penn State. Clemson was the team that was on the outside looking in. And, of course, Penn State still has to play some of these teams in the college football playoff, including Ohio State. That's going to be a showdown in a couple weeks. So we definitely will have an eye on that. But I like to see Ohio State at the top just because I think they have a really good resume, even though they really haven't had a huge test to date outside of Wisconsin. But I think of any team outside of LSU, I think they have looked the best of any team so far. But I want to get your thoughts initially on the actual order, and then this Penn State Clemson dilemma at 4-5.
I think the committee got it right. I mean, it's when you do ranking, this is the first college football playoff ranking. This is not going to hold up. So like, all these Clemson fans getting in our mentions saying, why aren't we fourth? Let's, you know, stay the course, because Penn State still has to play Ohio State, and more than likely the loser of that game is going to fall out of the top four, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
exactly. So and Penn State really hasn't had a big challenge yet, so they're still relatively unproven. But they've looked better than Clemson, I think, so far this year. And so, like, it's Clemson this year against against ACC competition has not looked like the best team to me. It's not looked like a top four team in the country. They should have lost North Carolina. North Carolina, you know, went for overtime. But to me, I think the committee got it right. Ohio State has looked like the best team in the country. They played a top 10 team in Wisconsin, and they blew them out. I mean, they had a one big test of the year, and they really showed up to the game. LSU and Alabama obviously play this Saturday. That'll be a big test. I'm not sure the loser of that game is necessarily out of the college football playoff, but it may, you know, signal a rise for a team like Clemson or Penn State to jump ahead of the loser in that one. But again, this is still too early, so getting, I think, you know, riled up over rankings this early is a little, I guess, it's just too early to get a little riled up about this, because I think Penn State so far looks like a better team than Clemson, but at the same time, they still have to play Ohio State, and the loser of that game is going to be out of the college football playoff, I think, at the end of the day, because you're going to have two SEC teams, I think, in. So let's calm down, but I think for the time being, the committee got it right.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you, and I say that because everyone likes to criticize the committee, especially when their team is on the outside looking in. That's what happened with Clemson. They are the reigning national champion, so everyone is expecting them to be in. Even though they have a 9-0 record right now, everybody else has an 8-0 record. that is in that top four, and I'm right there with you. I think Clemson just hasn't looked like a top four team in the country so far this year, and Penn State has, Alabama, LSU, and Ohio State have as well, and they've really struggled in some games this year. I always come back to that North Carolina game where I thought they should have lost if Carolina just caused a better play down the stretch, and there's been some other games where they haven't looked that great either. Everyone knows about Trevor Lawrence's struggles this year, even though he's played better over the past few weeks, but Clemson just hasn't looked like the team we saw last year. And, of course, they did lose a lot on defense, and they are relatively young on that side of the ball. The offense just hasn't taken the next step like we were accustomed to seeing. But I did want to ask you this, though. The Ohio State and LSU dilemma at the top is really interesting to me. And I know I said that Ohio State has looked like the best team in the country this year, but LSU, they really have some really good resumes, resume wins this year, I should say, Florida, Texas, and some other games as well where they really did show up and played really well, and I thought they dominated most of those games. So between those two, if you had to pick one right now, would you go with LSU or Ohio State if they had to play in a game today?
Man, that's a tough one. That's such a tough question, and I think it boils down to senior leadership versus NFL talent. I think LSU probably has the advantage in terms of the senior leadership with Joe Burrow and those guys over there. But with Ohio State, you have Justin Fields, Chase Young, Okuda, all guys who are, you know, not seniors, but they have premier NFL talent. And I think Ohio State, in terms of just pure talent, wins that game. But it's going to be close. I mean, it would be close. It would be a great game. But give me Ohio State in that one. And you know, everyone griping about LSU not being number one. In terms of the eye test, how can you not put Ohio State number one? I understand LSU has, you know, had some bigger tests against teams like Texas, you know, already. But, like, you know, when you look at Ohio State, the one real big test they had was Wisconsin, and they blew them out. This is a team that I think has the best talent in the country, but they've also blown out everybody they've faced. So I just don't know how you couldn't put them number one right now. So any gripes, especially this early, is just so – it's just mind-boggling to me that so many people are riled up about Ohio State being number one because they're going to play Penn State. If they beat Penn State, then they deserve that number one ranking. If they lose, then they don't deserve that number one ranking. They'll fall down the ranking. It's that simple, and I think people just need to wait and be patient because these rankings will change. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Right. And that's the thing that a lot of fans don't really understand. They think the college football playoff starts tomorrow, and Clemson is going to be on the outside looking in. Some of these teams still have to play each other. Of course, LSU and Alabama, a showdown we'll get into later on in some of the podcast episodes this week, still have to play each other. And, of course, Ohio State and Penn State are going to play each other in a couple weeks. So as long as Clemson keeps winning, they're going to be in the college football playoff just because – it's going to be a process of elimination. It's going to be a brutal war between some of these teams, and they're going to beat up on each other. And the first showdown starts this weekend between LSU and Alabama. And, of course, like I said, Ohio State and Penn State still have to play each other, even though I think Ohio State is the better team right now. All it takes is one loss to knock a team out of the college football playoffs. So it's going to be really interesting to see exactly what happens the rest of the way. Now, in my personal opinion, I think that Ohio State would beat LSU. Just because I'm a big believer in Justin Fields. I love what he brings to the table. And I know that they have the experience over Ohio State. But I just love what he brings to the table and the added dynamic that he brings to the table, not only as a passer, but also a runner. And the LSU's defense hasn't been great this year. And I think Ohio State really could exploit them in some areas. And, of course, on the opposite end or the opposing side of the ball, you have Chase Young. And I just don't see LSU having anybody really to contain him, but they do have the weapons on the perimeter to really exploit that Ohio State defense, even though the matchup between Okuda, Damon Arnett, Sean Wade against Justin Jefferson and also Jamar Chase, that definitely will be in a very intriguing matchup. So I'm really fascinated by that match, and I'm really hoping Ohio State LSU matches up down the road somehow. Did you have something else to add to it?
Yeah, and I think when you look at LSU's roster, other than, you know, an underperforming defense, I think the weak spot of that team is the offensive line.
Yeah.
And when you go against Ohio State's big front seven, I mean, that's going to be a challenge for them. I think that'll be a tough match. That'll be a really tough matchup for LSU. And going up against Alabama will be the barometer test, right? Because obviously Alabama always has one of the best front sevens in all of college football each year. You know, Terrell Lewis, Anthony Jennings, those guys. It's going to be a really good test for LSU this weekend to see if they can handle those big fronts, because Ohio State's coming. They got guys like Chase Young who just come off like a four sack game. So it's going to be interesting to see how LSU handles Alabama's front, because that could be a big test going forward to see how they handle Ohio State and Chase Young.
Without question. And the college football playoff is something that we're going to talk about very frequently on this show. But before we move on to our next segment, I want to remind the listeners about Peloton. Peloton is offering a limited time offer. You can get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started. Again, that's onepeloton.com and use the promo code LOCKED to get started. So the next segment that I want to get into is something that we really discussed off the air, and something that I thought was very interesting. And I want to get your quick opinion on this, just because I said we're going to touch on this briefly. The Senior Bowl Combine invitations have been out. There's been some names that had already surfaced already. We've seen a couple players in Cal's, Ashton Davis, and also Evan Weaver. There's been some small school guys like Jeremy Chin and also Alex Taylor that have accepted some invites as well. So among the early guys, who are you most excited about that has already received and accepted their Senior Bowl Combine or Senior Bowl invitation, I should say?
In the preseason, I highlighted a guy from the Pac-12, from the Colorado Buffaloes. Guy's a linebacker. His name's Davion Taylor. This guy is a track guy. This guy might end up being one of the fastest players in the draft, regardless of position, and he plays linebacker. This guy is a freak athlete. He's on Bruce Feldman's freak list. This guy was a 100-meter and 200-meter dash champion in the Pac-12. This guy plays linebacker. I think he's 6'3", 230. This guy has an insane physical profile. He really hasn't put it on the field because he hasn't really invested his time into football. He's been more of a track guy, almost like Ashton Davis for Colorado, right? Because Ashton Davis was a hurdler. He had the whole background, and then now we're starting to see him fully invested in football and show that potential he showed, you know, that he really has. And I think Taylor's the same kind of way. Taylor's a little, I guess, more unproven, a little more raw. I think you put it nicely in the Slack chat earlier that he's about as raw as a steak from the grocery store, right? that's basically what the deal is with Davion Taylor. But this guy can go sideline to sideline in a hurry, man. This guy is really good. And then Hunt, Robert Hunt, the guard from Louisiana Lafayette, this guy is also someone I really like. I got to his tape just after the November updates. I got an early tip from somebody saying, hey, this guy's going to be a top, you know, 100, 150 pick in the next year's draft. I'm like, man, I got to get my eyes on this guy. And sure enough, he got a Senior Bowl invite 2 days later. This guy is mean. He's a mauler. And this guy will – this guy has such a mean streak in the run game. I think he walks into the NFL and has starter traits as a run blocker. This guy, he may not be, you know, come from that big old school. He's a little unheralded at Louisiana Lafayette, but this guy has traits and this guy is dominant. One of the biggest tips I got from a scout early on in this industry was that if you're watching a small school guy, they need to dominate. Yes. And that's what Robert Hunt does. Each play, this guy is moving his guy off the ball. I like his mean streak, and I cannot wait to see him in Mobile against some of these top defensive tackles.
And he's a guy I need to do a little bit more homework on, and I'm really glad that we're starting to see some of these Senior Bowl invitations arise, just because of all the 81 guys that were invited, this is really the cream of the crop as far as who the NFL guys requested, and we're going to get a good idea of exactly who and how they feel about some of these guys, because Jim Nagy talked about this briefly in an interview that I was watching of him a couple of days ago, and that he has help from the NFL guys just because they request some of these players that they want to see. And Hunt was definitely one of those guys that they requested just because they want to see him play some more upper level type of competition, just because he's not playing the best type of competition out there in the Sun Belt, Louisiana Lafayette. So they want to see how he's able to anchor and power against some of these upper echelon types of guys, just because we're going to see guys potentially like Derrick Brown and Raekwon Davis and some others at the Senior Bowl. So he's going to be able to face some of these top-notch guys. And if he's able to hold up, we could be talking about a day two type of prospect. I think that's a fair range for him for him right now. So I'm really interested to dive more into his tape, just because I've only seen a couple games of him, and that was back during the summer. So I haven't seen any updated things on him, but his nastiness and his mean streak are one of the first things, a couple of first things that people say about him. And I love watching offensive linemen that just don't care about anybody, and they're very nasty. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to love his tape.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Remember Will Hernandez at UTEP?
Absolutely.
How fun his tape was.
Yeah.
Now Hunt, I don't think is as polished as Hernandez was coming out. Hernandez was actually pretty technically sound coming out of UTEP. Yeah. I don't think Hunt is as polished. I think you need to kind of get him under control. It's almost like a Tasmanian devil at guard, right? He kind of gets over his toes and gets out of balance. You know, he's on the ground a lot. But it's one of those things where this guy is just so powerful. And immediately when you turn on the tape, he's the strongest guy on the field. This guy is pushing guys off the line of scrimmage. It reminded me just a lot of Will Hernandez at UTEP, just seeing this guy dominate each play in the run game. And I really like this guy. I think he can legit, you put it best, I think he can legit be a day two guy with a good showing at the Senior Bowl.
I'm really excited to watch him. And I'm probably going to watch him probably on Sunday, just so when I have some time to actually sit down before the slate of games come on, I want to sit down and really dive into this film and write down some notes about him. So I'm definitely going to have some things to say on our Monday morning podcast about him. So keep an eye out on that name, Robert Hunt. Jonah is an advocate of him. So, of course, he's one guy I do trust. I trust his scouting guy immensely. And I'm sure I'm going to like a lot of things about Robert Hunt. So I'm excited to get into his tape. But the segment that we did tease earlier on in the introduction is that on every Thursday podcast episode from here on out, we're going to do what's called a Twitter Thursday, where we're going to take you guys' mailbag questions and we're going to answer them on this entire podcast. And of course, I know it is Wednesday. We are a little bit of ahead just because we have so much going on later on in the week with Alabama, LSU, Penn State, Minnesota. We want to make sure we have plenty of time to talk about those. So we're going to do it a day ahead for you guys. So we're going to call it Twitter Wednesday this week. And I just want to thank each and every one of you guys for sending your questions in. There was plenty of interesting questions. And we're going to start this thing off right now. And the first question comes from Michael Christopher and is at BigDogs1318. Fantastic Twitter name, Michael, by the way. So he asks, what's the difference between Tristan Wirfs and Andrew Thomas as prospects? And who do you think has the higher ceiling between the two? And I want to get your opinion on this first, just because I know my answer, but I want to see if we're on the same page here.
Oh, man. And upside is such, and thank you for the question. Upside is such a tough dilemma to kind of figure out, because it's not just that, like, athletic upside. I think you also understand how Andrew Thomas is the real deal, man. This guy could be Trent Williams 2.0. Or, like, this guy is that good. Like, he is locked down every time he's in his pass sets. This guy is athletic. This guy can move. There's not really a major flaw you can point to Andrew Thomas's game. So it's really hard to see him, I think, fail in the NFL, at least be a productive starter. I do think he has a higher floor than Tristan Wirfs. So I think Wirfs is elite athlete. And this guy was he the number one freak on Bruce Feldman's list?
I believe he was. Yes,
yeah,
he was.
Yeah, so this guy can squat like 2 million pounds. This guy runs like a 4.2. I mean, this guy, Tristan Wirfs, is like the Bo Jackson of offensive tackles, apparently. Yeah. But I don't think he's as polished in pass protection as Andrew Thomas. I think some scouts might get a little leery that he's not playing on the left side. You know, to me, it doesn't matter. I could care less about whether you play left tackle or right tackle. You face good rushers on both sides. But I know there's some traditional scouts who may have some, you know, concerns that he's not playing on the left side. But to me, I think upside, I don't know if one has the edge on higher upside than the other. Obviously, Wirfs is this incredible athlete, but Andrew Thomas is a great player in his own right. And I think both players can be all pros. So I don't want to pick one or the other on upside, but I will say Andrew Thomas is the higher floor because I think he's more technically sound in his pass sets.
I 110% agree with you. And so here's my definition or my comparison between the two. So the name that I wrote down for Andrew Thomas, do you remember DeBrickashaw Ferguson?
Jets? Oh, my goodness, yes. He was a good player for the Jets.
Yeah, he was.
Man.
He was very underrated. And that's the player that I compared to Andrew Thomas. And that's not a knock against him. For those of you that do not know who DeBrickashaw Ferguson was, he was a very consistent left tackle for the Jets for a very long time. I believe he was a three-time Pro Bowler, and it should have been much more. And
absolutely.
I always felt like he was severely underrated. And the difference between Andrew Thomas and Tristan Wirfs is that I think Andrew Thomas, of course, like you said, has the higher floor right now, just because I think he's a bit of a more safe prospect. But if you're looking for upside and a guy who I think could be the real deal about 2 to 3 years down the road from now, I think Tristan Wirfs is your guy. And I know there are some concerns about him playing on the left side, but he actually did it this year when Alaric Jackson went down with injury. I believe it was against Miami, Ohio.
Right.
He went over to the left side, and he made it look easy, like he had been playing it all of his life. And that's something that you worry about. And I'm not a huge fan of switching offensive linemen's positions. I like keeping them at one spot just because I've seen so many guys be in a bit of an experiment, and it really derailed their career, just switching them from position to position. But I think Tristan Wirfs has more upside, even though I don't think he's going to be the better player right away. Like Andrew Thomas, I think he's pro-ready right now. But as far as athleticism and upside, I think Tristan Wirfs is that guy without question.
Yeah, I think upside is just like such a tricky question, because just because Tristan Wirfs is more athletic and more gifted, I'd say, than Andrew Thomas, I don't necessarily think his upside's higher. I think when you look at Andrew Thomas, just how well-rounded he is, this guy could be the best tackle in football 5-6 years from now.
Yeah.
Like, so the upside question, Tristan Wirfs, absolutely. This guy's upside's through the roof. Physical profile, something we haven't seen an offensive tackle since Tyron Smith coming out of USC. So it's just one of those things where it's like, worse, yes, physical profile, he has the advantage. But Andrew Thomas, I could very well see the best offensive tackle in 5-6 years from now. So I think upside to me is similar. So there's not a tiebreaker there that's going to put one over the other. It's Andrew Thomas's floor to me that gives him the slight edge over Wirfs. I think I had Andrew Thomas 6th overall on my board, and Wirfs was somewhere 8 or 9. So they're really close. But Thomas's floor, I think, as a technician and guy who's more polished technically in his pass sets, I think he's a little more under control and on balance than Wirfs right now. I think that gives him the slight edge over Wirfs, despite Wirfs' incredible physical profile.
And Wirfs versus Thomas is something that's going to be debated all the way up until draft day, just because they're just in a tier of their own as far as this offensive tackle class. And even though Alex Leatherwood is really gaining ground, I still think those two are really at the top by themselves. But Leatherwood definitely can gain some ground with those guys with a very promising or very good showing this weekend against LSU. I think he can earn himself some money, even though he's already seen as a first-round prospect. And also Jedrick Wills from Alabama, a guy that's gaining some steam here lately as well. But I think right now Andrew Thomas and Tristan Wirfs right now, I just think both of those guys are in a tier of their own as far as his offensive tackle class. But next question comes from Jose Ramiro Stan, and his Twitter name is @whypeople. That is another pretty interesting Twitter name. But, of course, I couldn't let you get away without asking you a cornerback question, just right, because this is your area of expertise, and I think this is a fantastic question. So he asked, if Derek Stingley was draft eligible this year, who would be your CB1 between him and Jeffrey Okuda?
Man, that's tough. Because you know me, man. Me and you are probably the biggest Okuda fans on earth, man. We love his athleticism. We love the way he's playing the ball this year. His man coverage traits are through the roof. I mean, there's nothing really you can't like about Okuda. This guy's physical. He really has the whole package. But I think I'm taking Stingley. I think that Stingley would be the – other than – I think I still have Chase Young above him, number one overall. But Stingley, to me, is the second best non-quarterback in the country right now in terms of just pure talent. This guy is as much talent as any quarterback prospect I've seen, probably since Patrick Peterson.
Yeah.
And this guy – of course, it's LSU that has him too. So it's like LSU and Ohio State constantly fighting over corners and safeties to be DBU. And it's just back and forth. And Stingley, to me, this guy is just super talented. Even as a true freshman, this guy is matching up against some of the best players. I'll probably have a better answer for you after this weekend, because Stingley has his biggest test of the year against Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, and those boys. So it's going to be really interesting to see him match up against those guys as a true freshman. But if he matches up well, man, there's nothing. I don't think there's any corner in the country I'd take over Stingley if he can match up well against those guys. But Okuda is right there. I love Okuda. I think he's the real deal. But give me Stingley for now.
The hype surrounding Stingley when he's draft eligible is going to be nuts. It's going to be ridiculous just because he already seems like the best cornerback in the nation as a true freshman. And I thought he struggled a bit in the Florida game. But what I love to see about him is that, yes, he did struggle early on, but he came back. He caught an interception very late, and that shows you that he can fight through adversity and just how mentally strong he is. And he feels like Absolutely. He belongs. He feels like he belongs, and that's something that's hard to find, especially in a true freshman. For him to bounce back like that in the SEC in a big game between top 10 teams, that was really impressive to see. I think his technique is outstanding, though. I haven't seen a freshman with such Absolutely. Advancement in his technique and how good his footwork and patience are. Maybe ever since I've been evaluating. I have not seen anybody with his technique, how good it is, how strong he is, and just how active he is with his hands at the line of scrimmage. I haven't seen anything like it. So the hype's around.
Listen here about Derek Stingley, too. Mm-hmm. As a true freshman, you almost want him to make mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to see, how, like you said, how he deals with that adversity. It is so hard for young cornerbacks. It's so rare to see young cornerbacks get their confidence back, because if they let a big touchdown go by them, they miss out on an interception, they drop an interception, they don't have amnesia like some older players, like some seniors might have, right? They keep thinking about the play they could have made, or they just keep trying to make the next big play to make up for their bad mistake. Stingley has the mental toughness and the mental fortitude of a freshman I've never seen before. This guy had some bad mistakes against Florida, but he came right back, and you know, this guy's making big-time plays at the catch point. You know, it's very easy to lose your confidence as a corner, and for Stingley to have that mental toughness as a freshman is very, very rare.
Yeah, and it's going to be – I think this is, of course, one of his bigger tests of the year, just because Jerry Jeudy is always going to be a tough matchup if Stingley does travel with him in the slot. Devontae Smith is very experienced, and I think he's more of a master of none type of receiver, but he's really well-rounded, and he just knows how to get open. Henry Ruggs, of course, he's lightning in the bottle. He could break a game open at any moment. And then Jaylen Waddle, we can't forget about him as well, even though he's not draft eligible. So Stingley is going to have his hands full. We can't forget about, of course, Christian Fulton on the other side, who is another very talented corner that has already entered or heard his name in the first-round discussions, I should say. So this matchup is going to be really fascinating. But for me personally, I'm right there with you. I agree. I would take Stingley, even though the sample size isn't as great. I think the upside definitely exceeds Okudah, even though that's not to say Okudah is not going to be a fantastic draft prospect, just because I think he is going to be – he's definitely going to be in my top five as long as he stays the course as far as draft prospects go. I think the world of Okudah, but I just think Stingley has much more upside. So with that being said, before we move on to our next questions, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, and we are back, continuing on with our Twitter mailbag, and we've had some really good questions. Once again, we are introducing Twitter Thursdays, and of course, it is Wednesday. We are previewing it a bit early, a day early, just for those of you that are just now tuning in to the podcast. We are answering Twitter questions, and of course, we are going to make this a weekly thing. So continue to send in your questions, even if we don't get to it. So I want to continue on with these questions, and this is a bit of a funny one. It comes from Adam Huddle, who is from @HuddleLeah12. He asks, how many times do you anticipate rewatching LSU versus Alabama?
you know that one GIF where it's what's his name? Oh, he's testifying in front of the Senate. It was all the President Trump guy who's like 100 times, 200 times, 300 times.
Yeah, I know exactly more. what you're talking about.
He's like more. Yeah. So to me, it's like, when you count up how many times we're gonna watch the all 22 cut up in the spring, it's going to reach like 100 times. And I'm not even joking with you. It's going to reach like 100 times.
Just because there's so many prospects you Absolutely. Have to watch in this game. And I sent out a tweet earlier just talking about all the individual matchups. And I listed like 15 draft prospects that you have to watch in this game. So there's going to be so many guys we have to watch in this game. It's probably going to be over 50. For me, just because you want to get a good look at some of the guys in this game. And, of course, some underclassmen are going to catch your eye in this game just because this is a blue blood matchup. This is by far two of the best programs in the country. two teams that are already in the college football playoff in the top four. So there's going to be some fantastic individual matchups, but I don't want to touch on that too much just because we're saving that for Thursday and Friday show. We're going to do a preview on both shows for the LSU and Alabama game. So I don't want to spoil that too much, but I want to move on to the next question. And it comes from Abdul Aziz Hamada. And he asked, I think this is a pretty easy question here. He says, true or false, is Chase Young a top three pick? And I'll take this one. I think this is a no-brainer. True, anybody that does not answer true, they probably need to get their temperature checked just because Chase Young has been the best player in the country this year. And if I had a Heisman vote, believe it or not, I would choose him over Joe Burrow just because I think he's had a greater type of impact than what Joe Burrow has. And I know the Heisman Trophy has turned into a quarterback or running back award for the most part. But I think with the way that Chase Young has affected games, I think he has had a greater impact than what Joe Burrow has had, even though I know Joe Burrow is a quarterback. And, of course, his presence is going to be felt a little bit more just because of the impact of the position that he plays. But as far as impacting the game and taking over games, Chase Young would be my Heisman. He would be my Heisman vote right now.
Yeah, so let's just rephrase that question. True or false, is Chase Young the Heisman right now? Right now, I'd say true. Just because, like what you said, there hasn't been a more dominant player in college football. Quarterback, running back, edge rusher, whatever it may be, Chase Young's been the most dominant player in college football. And I respect Joe Burrow's been awesome this season. Tua's been great. Jonathan Taylor's, you know, he's blew up the Big Ten. Even Chuba Hubbard, he's going to rush for over 2,000 yards in the Big 12. But Chase Young, quite simply, has been the most dominant player in college football. He had 4 sacks against Wisconsin. I mean, good Lord. This guy is going to – if this guy has, like, another multi-sack game against Penn State, then you got the Michigans coming. I mean, the hype for Chase Young for the Heisman is going to be unreal. And it's going to be something that we haven't seen in a decade. The last time we saw it was, like, in Dominican Sue in Nebraska. And even he didn't win the Heisman, even though there are some arguments that he should have. But Chase Young, to me, is the Heisman right now. If I had my vote, I'd pick Chase Young.
Yep, I 100% agree. Everyone knows how much I love Chase Young. He's been our number one player on our big board.
The only two. Imagine Chase Young, other than your number one player in the preseason. Could it be us?
Could not be me. Shots fired. Could not be me. All right. But anyway, no shade against any of our colleagues at the Draft Network, but we're just saying that we had Chase Young as our number one player overall since the summer. But anyway, I want to get to our last question of the day, and it comes from Tommy Evans Barton, and his Twitter name is T. Evans Barton, and he asks, watching Yetur Gross-Matos and the flashes that he shows, he sometimes seems to be a top 10 player. But sometimes there are some other occurrences where he just doesn't look like that type of player. Do you think he could rise up the board, or do you think he is slipping a bit?
Man, Gross-Matos, man, this guy scares me about as much as any edge rusher in this draft class, because you see those flashes, like you said, you see those top 10 flashes of him running around the edge, bending, dipping, and flattening to the quarterback. But there are other times where he just goes invisible, and you're saying, you're too talented to go to not produce for that many stretches of game, right? And this guy has so much traits, physical profiles through the roof, and you just think to yourself on tape, why is he not being that left tackle? Why is he not being that right tackle? Why is he getting to the quarterback there? He has too much talent to be blocked one-on-one. This guy has the length, he has the speed, he has the power. There's no reason for why he shouldn't have double-digit sacks every year. But there's times in games where he just goes invisible, while in other games he has monster performances. So you're trying to see, which guy am I getting here? And so he scares me a little bit, because he's going to be one of those guys, you're going to have to trust the traits. And production-wise from game to game, it's just not there. But you're going to have to trust his traits with his length, his physical profile, and what he puts up measurable-wise in the pre-draft process. But, I mean, I could absolutely see this guy rise. We've seen players like this before. You know, we have a lot of history to go off on in terms of edge rushers with great physical profiles and measurables going high in the first round, higher than they should have. Because the NFL doesn't care much about production as much as other scouts in the media might. because you remember Rashawn Gary from Michigan last year? This guy had zero production, essentially, but this guy was the number one recruit coming out of high school, freak athlete, and this guy had traits through the roof. And he still went, I think, 14th overall or 14th overall, whatever it was, to the Packers. So you're going to have – there's going to be some team that will roll the dice on Yetur Gross-Matos. And I just don't know which team it will be, but there will be a team. I think he goes in the first round next April.
I agree. I think he's going to be a first-round selection just because I think he's going to test off the charts, and there's going to be some team that think they can add a little bit of weight on him and really help develop his game a little bit further. And he really already has the pass-rushing aspect kind of down a bit as far as what he wants to do as far as a pass-rushing plan and some of the things that he provides in that area. But he scares me as a run defender. I mean, he just completely gets blown off the ball sometimes, and him being an edge setter, it just isn't his thing to do. And I think that's the biggest thing that worries me about him and his light weight. He's going to have to gain some weight. Now, he's been a little bit better as far as an edge setter this year and holding the point as far as an edge setter against the run on the edge of the line of scrimmage as the end man in the line of scrimmage. But he really scares me as a run defender. But as far as a pass rusher, I think that's where his value does lie. So would I be comfortable with taking him in the first round? Maybe the back half, I think. But as far as being a top 15 selection or top 20, I think that would make me a little bit nervous just because of the traits that he does provide as a run defender. But if you're drafting him, you're drafting him for his pass rushing assets and what he brings to the table in that area. And you're hoping that you can mold him as a run defender, which I think some team is going to convince themselves that they can do. But as far as where he is as a run defender right now, I think he has a ways to go. So that's absolutely the area that really does worry me with him right now. Do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I think what we all have to remember about this is, remember, he was suspended to start the season. So there are some off-the-field issues I think that he has to work out. And I think there are some teams that will hammer him in the interview process about what he was doing off the field at Penn State. So it's going to be interesting to see how the kind of the rumors that come out of the interview process in Indianapolis to see how well he interviewed, because that will be a big test to see, you know, what if he goes in the top half of the first round, maybe he goes more towards the bottom half, maybe second round even. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does in the interview process. Obviously, we're not in those rooms, but, you know, word gets out really quickly out there to see, you know, in the draft circles about how players did in those rooms. So it's, I think Gross-Matos is one of the, you know, he's one of the key players, at least right now, that I'm looking at in terms of the interview process. And if it goes well, he could be a top 15 pick, and I wouldn't bat an eye. I mean, this guy has all the traits you look for in the pass rusher. Jordan explained it really well. This guy's a quick first step. This guy has fluid hips. He already has an advanced pass rush plan in terms of secondary and counter moves. But, you know, and we've seen NFL pick guys who aren't great run defenders. We've seen guys like Vic Beasley go top 10. Brian Burns essentially went top 15. So it's one of those things where I think the NFL values obviously that pass rush value. And if that's what he's going to bring to the table, then I think teams are going to value him in the top 15 range. But it's all going to depend on how I think he interviews, because that will, I think, determine whether he's a top 15 pick or somewhere in the top 40, top 50.
I'm fascinated to see how the NFL really stacks up these edge rushers after Chase Young, just because I think they are a bit of a clutter after that. You're talking about guys like Curtis Weaver, Julian Okwara, Alden Robinson, even Yetur Gross-Matos, like we just mentioned. And I think everybody, especially every team, is going to have a different sequential order of how they feel about these guys on the draft board. So that's something that I'm looking forward to as the draft process goes along. And, of course, all these guys are still adding to their resume. But edge rusher is something that isn't, I wouldn't say is very deep, but I think it has some depth at the top. But after that, I think it does bottom out a bit after that first and second tier. So with that being said, that is our show for today. Thank you guys for listening. As always, we will be back tomorrow debating some of the games and the matchups throughout the week. And what we're going to do, I'm going to discuss this with Jonah. What we're going to do is we're probably going to break up this LSU and Alabama game with an offensive and defensive preview, just because there's so many guys that we want to get to. And, of course, as residential scouts, we're going to want to get to every single matchup included within this game. So we have some special things planned for you guys for the next few days. Of course, we want to thank all our loyal listeners. Make sure to tell a friend to tell a friend to listen and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star review. And as always, thank you guys for listening.